Anyone who's spent time in the company of young children comes to appreciate their logic, particularly when they're claiming what is theirs. I was recently with a mother, and of her four children, she was home with her two younger sons, both under the age of five. And they began getting very squirmy and started fighting, and she had to run an errand and suggested that we would go for a ride in the car, because that could be a little calming. And so, strapping them into the back seats, which kind of eliminated the flailing arms that was annoying us at the time, we realized, as all of you realize, that once you take away the arms, the arguments become verbal, and they're quite creative. The older of the two boys started attacking his younger brother because they were seated at opposite ends of the car, and the younger brother was looking out his window. For some reason, at that age, he claimed a proprietary right to the view. If he could put the window up and down, why, he was entitled to determine who could look out of the window. Mothers who are the most brilliant judges and arbiters in the world would probably put St. Paul to shame, said, "I suggest you both look out the front windshield and we can all see what we spot together." We laugh at the logic of children. And we laugh because while there is a creative validity to their argument, they're obviously not based on sound premises. One does not have a proprietary right to what is the outside view. And yet, how much of that illogic do we carry with us into our adult lives? What do we claim is our proprietary right or interest? And this is the very thing Jesus is confronting in the parable, which is famously called the parable of the Pharisee and the publican. On first glance, when I hear this parable, like you, I'm like, God, love that tax collector, and ooh, beware of those Pharisees. But we all know what Pharisees were. They wore fine garments. They occupied privileged positions in the sanctuary. They had all the right creative words which commanded attention. And the publican, the tax collector, was the outcast. I'm dating myself, but there was a horrible, a creative movie by the name of Repo Man, which came out, I think, in the 70s or the 80s. I think it may have starred Charles Bronson. But I would say perhaps the lowest form of public servant, if you consider it a public service, is someone who repossesses things. Imagine someone going into a home and repossessing a baby's crib. But I can assure you there's someone who does that. Think of that person. And now you can see in the societal framework just how low a publican was. The tax collector was taxing the people of Israel for the Roman Empire. So was taking and giving it to a richer outside authority, and for that reason was despised. And so people's first instinct would not be to have any care or kindness for the tax collector. And as all parables take the world and turn it upside down, that's precisely what Jesus does when he lauds the prayer of the tax collector over the Pharisee. The Pharisee was not wrong. The Pharisee was dutiful, earnest, one who prayed faithfully. People grew accustomed to seeing that and loved that. And so why does Jesus seem to chip away at all that gives us comfort and security and turn our heads upside down? Well, because Jesus is teaching us something vital about God. And the first thing he's teaching us is this. We cannot bribe God. No matter how hard we try, no matter how much we throw, God cannot be bought. God cannot be owned. The theologian who taught for a number of years at Georgetown University and later went on to become the president of the Association of Catholic Colleges and University, a German-born woman, Monica Hellwig, wrote this rather compelling narrative on this gospel parable. She says, "Is God to give us preferential hearing because we are the devout, because we have paid for the divine favor with abundant devotional practices? Is God to favor us against the poor nations of the world or against the communist countries because these are pagan or atheist in their leadership? Is God to attend more to the churchgoers than the homeless, to be more connected to the seminaries than those in jails, for those at the Sunday morning coffee hour in the church hall than for the starving? And in these words, she turns our own very world upside down. As St. Augustine says in that famous line, if we really want God to deliver us from ourselves, we have to begin by undeceiving ourselves. As we look out at the world and as we cast our prayers to make the world more just, have we, in a sense, categorized the world into Pharisees and publicans? Have we suggested that there are some who more merit God's favor than others? And do we tend to side with those who merit favor and demonize the others? Do we, in our faith, claim that same proprietary view that that little boy claimed sitting next to the car window, saying, "Only I can see what I see"? I take great consolation this Sunday in the second reading of St. Paul to Timothy, because Paul knows he's a sinner. He knows it was sin and conversion that brought him to the faith. And he knows that while he earnestly tried to preach and teach so many of the young communities of the church, that only God could judge him. Only God could lift him up. And that's why he uses that very powerful image that God is the just judge. Jesus wants us to know in no uncertain terms that it is our duty, our obligation, our faith requires us to call out injustice, to challenge authority when it is unjust, to lift up the poor and the lowly, and to, when appropriate, bring down the mighty. But at no point can we ever think that God is on our side, that God does not hear others' prayers, that God is somehow with us against the opponent. No. God is omnipotent. God is eternal. God is with all and for all. And our prayer is that God change the hearts of all so that all can form one human body. This is our faith. This is our challenge. This is our great hope.